Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for coming this morning and for this opportunity to speak at such an illustrious and iconic institution as Yeshiva University. And I've heard wonderful things about this particular program and would like to congratulate the organizers of it and also to thank them for this opportunity to be able to share words of Torah with you this morning. The topic for this morning is a moral and strategic vision for the Jewish people. And it's based on my new book, which has just been published, which I've co-authored with Rabbi Beryl Wine, called The Legacy. The subtitle of the book is Teachings for Life from the Great Lithuanian Rabbis. And what the book seeks to do is to present a moral and strategic vision for the Jewish people. And I'd like to begin our discussion here this morning with a somewhat controversial point, because at the heart and soul of the enterprise of Torah Judaism is the Mishnah, which says Havezayir b'mitzvah kalaka b'chamura, that one has to be as careful and as cautious and as punctilious with what we perceive to be a light mitzvah as we would be with a stringent or a serious one. And so at the heart and soul of the Torah enterprise is the fact that we do not differentiate and do not create categories of importance within mitzvahs. Every sniff, every part of Shulchan Aruch, every iota of the law, of the code of Jewish law, of the Tariag mitzvahs, is our duty as a Torah Jew. And yet, on the other hand, we have a tradition, we have a Masoras that has come down right from the times of the Gemara until modern times, the concept of focusing on certain key values, key central values, and giving them greater priority. We have to try and work out how that's possible. But on the one hand, we have this imperative to treat all of Torah Judaism with the same level of importance. And on the other hand, we find that our sages didn't do that. The Ramban, Moshe ben Nachman, in his famous letter, where he addresses his son and he gives him instructions for life. The Ramban, and I'm sure that you all are very familiar with the Ramban's letter to his son, the Ramban could have written that letter in one sentence. He could have said, keep all of Torah and mitzvahs and all of Shulchan Aruch, full stop. He's giving guidance to his son for life. And yet he didn't do that. He emphasized certain key values. He emphasized the importance of Yiras Shemayim, of Yiras Chet. He emphasized the importance of anava, of humility, of equality of all people, of dveikus to Hashem. He emphasized all of these key values. It's a very short letter, but nevertheless, he chose to emphasize and prioritize certain values over others. Another example, famous letter of the Vilna Gaon. The great genius of Vilna, Rav Eliyahu Kramer, was embarking upon the enterprise of making Aliyah. And as is well known, he began that journey, and at the time he was going to make the journey, he thought he was going to be away from home for a very long period of time, and he wrote a letter and left behind instructions with his wife and with his children how the home should function. So it's a very important document. In the end, the Vilna Gaon's trip was aborted. He turned around, and there's a whole discussion as to why he didn't eventually make Aliyah, although a lot of his students did, and we know that certainly a very important part of the early Zionist movement was from the Talmidim of the Gra, but the Vilna Gaon himself didn't get there. This document is a fascinating document, the letter that he wrote to his family. It's a well-published and publicized document. It's a fascinating document because, think about it, he is sitting down to write to his wife and his children how he wants his home to function while he is away. And so you have one of the greatest Torah scholars of the last centuries who has to crystallize in a few short words what he considers to be the most important areas for his family to focus upon. And again, he could have just written in one sentence, keep all of Shulchan Aruch and keep the entire Torah, full stop. That could have been the end of it. And yet he didn't do that. He wrote a letter in which he chose to emphasize certain values. For example, he admonishes his children on the importance of Shmiras HaLoshen, of how they speak, that they need to speak with dignity, they need to speak with sensitivity, with kindness, with shalom, with peace. They have to respect their mother and their grandmother. He emphasized the importance of not pursuing materialism. He has a very powerful image in this letter where he says, the pursuit of materialism is like drinking salt water. That a person thinks the more that they drink it, they're quenching their thirst. In fact, they're only making themselves even more thirsty. It's a very powerful image. So he chose to focus on a few key issues and make those the priorities. So we see from the letter of the Ramban and the letter of the Vilna Gaon and many other letters and savars and ethical wills written by our sages throughout the generations, that there was this concept of focusing and giving one's attention to certain core values in order to say these are the values that have to make up our moral and strategic vision, even though we have the Mishnah that says that one has to be careful with the entire Torah, and even though what it means to be a Torah Jew is that we do not differentiate. We do not pick and choose which mitzvahs we will keep and which we won't. We do not pick and choose which aspects of Shulchan Aruch we will keep and which we won't. That it is, to be a Jew is to embrace all of it. And yet, our sages pointed in other directions. And perhaps they drew precedent from the Gemara in Megillah and Chav Zayin Amud Beis and Chav Ches Amud Aleph 27b, 28a, where the Gemara in Megillah gives records a number of discussions between great Talmudic sages who were coming towards the end of their life, and their students asked them, "Bameh erachta yomim, in what merit did you have such a long life?" And then they gave their students guidance on three or four key points of what to focus on in their lives. So it's possible that the Ramban and the Vilna Gaon drew their precedent from these Gemaras in Megillah, but nevertheless they did so. And so we find it a fact of Jewish history, a fact of Jewish life, Ma'aseh Rav, that we see established by the most powerful precedent of all, which is even more powerful even than the pages of the Gemara, and that is the deeds of the great Tzaddikim and the deeds of the great Rabbonim who actually did it. How could they do such a thing? I think that there are two possible explanations for it, and the reason I mention these explanations is because we are attempting this morning to try and articulate a framework for key Torah values that our generation should focus on, both as a klal as well as a prat, as individuals. And is that enterprise not a flawed enterprise in the first instance? So we've established that it's not a flawed enterprise. We have historic and Gemara precedent for the fact that there is a framework, there is a precedent for the concept of establishing these values. On what basis, why did they do it? Two possible reasons. One is practical and one is philosophical. On a practical level, as human beings, we have limited capacity. We have limited resources. And limited capacity and resources means limited time, limited effort, limited financial resources. And therefore, any area of life that we choose to invest effort has to be at the cost of something else. It is impossible by definition in life to embrace everything. Of course, we have to keep all of Shulchan Aruch, and no one... I'm going to stop putting that in as a caveat, because we're all amongst friends. Sometimes when if I speak in an audience where there may be people who will take license with Shulchan Aruch, so I'm going to stop putting that in as a caveat. Of course we keep every aspect of Shulchan Aruch, but where do we put our emphasis in life? Where is the emphasis in our service of Hashem? What are the core values of Torah Judaism that say this is the area we must put our effort, because we do have limited time, limited money, limited effort, and any bit of effort and time invested in one area of Torah and mitzvahs is at the expense of another area by definition, because that is the human condition. We have limited capacity. So that's a practical reason for doing it. In other words, the Ramban and the Vilna Gaon, from a very practical, educational point of view, if they had instructed their families to say to them, keep all of Torah and keep all of Shulchan Aruch full stop, the impact of the letter would have been negligible, because where's the focus? People need direction. There needs to be a sense of priority just for the human being to be able to focus on certain things at the expense of others. And then philosophically, there are certain values which are so primary that in fact the entire Torah is based upon them, and perhaps at this point one can it's important to almost take a step back and say that fulfillment of all of the details of the halacha can actually prevent a person, or put it this way, that in spite of the fact that a person can keep all of the details of the halacha, it is possible to say that a person may have missed the main enterprise of what Torah Judaism is all about. And so the priorities are not just about the practicalities of limited capacity. The priorities are saying there are certain meta values upon which Judaism is founded, and if those meta values are not lived and practiced and studied, then actually something fundamental is missing from the entire system. So that goes beyond just the practical reason for focus. There may indeed be a philosophical reason for the importance of this focus. And that's what the book, The Legacy, is all about. You may say that it takes a tremendous amount of chutzpah, because what gives the authors the right to be able to say that these are the core values to focus on whose authority? Because any person can have a discussion to debate and say, what are the core and most important principles of Judaism? Where should we devote an inordinate amount of our attention so that these values take priority? Who has the right to arrogate to themselves the discretion to choose in this vast system which is Hashem's Torah? And the answer is, of course, that, and I feel comfortable to speak on behalf of Rabbi Wein when I say this, that neither Rabbi Wein nor I took upon ourselves to choose the values. In fact, this is a book where we are recording a tradition, a Masoris that we both received from the great Lithuanian rabbis who were our teachers, and we form part of that tradition, whereby the Musar Shmuzin, the ethical discussions that were given in the yeshivas by the great Lithuanian rabbis, chose to emphasize certain dimensions of what Judaism is all about, and we are recording this. So in a certain sense, it's a very personal record based on traditions which we receive. The cover of the book, just to give you my own personal story so you see how it fits together before we get to the crux of our discussion. On the cover of the book, you will see that there is a photograph. The photograph, it's an old photograph, it's taken around about 1955 in Cleveland, Ohio, at the opening of the new Tells building that was built then. And on the cover is a picture of Rav Mordechai Katz, the Tells of Rosh Hashiva, who was a Holocaust survivor. Wasn't that he was not in the camps, and of course today is Yom HaShoah, this evening is Yom HaShoah, so a very important dimension of this book in a certain sense is about Holocaust commemoration, because so much of the loss of moral and strategic vision within the Jewish people is as a result of the devastation of the Holocaust. Rav Mordechai Katz, who managed to get out of Europe in 1940, Rav Aaron Kotler, who also got out just before the devastation of the war, who founded, of course, the famous Lakewood Yeshiva, and then Rav Yitzhak Ruderman, who founded Ner Yisrael. The reason for that picture on the cover is a very personal one, because inside the book you will see a photograph which contains those three, because this photograph the full photograph did not fit onto the cover, and inside the book the full photograph is published, because walking with these Roshei Yeshiva are two young yeshiva students at the time. The one was Rabbi Avraham Tanzer and Rabbi Azriel Chaim Goldfein. People who know South Africa will recognize those names, because Rabbi Tanzer, who today is is one of the longest serving rabbis in South Africa, came to Johannesburg, and he established the Yeshiva College campus, which is of course the main Mizrahi modern Orthodox campus in the city of Johannesburg. Rabbi Tanzer was instrumental in founding it. There's a shul with many minyanim, a school, the Yeshiva College school, which has about 1,000 students in it. And he had brought out his friend, who they'd been in Tells together in Cleveland, Rabbi Azriel Chaim Goldfein, to establish a yeshiva gadola, to establish a yeshiva of a tertiary yeshiva in Johannesburg, which he did. And that is, in fact, the yeshiva where I did most of my learning from Rabbi Azriel Chaim Goldfein of blessed memory, who passed away a few years ago. And He was a devoted student of Rav Mordechai Gifter, also one of the founding Telzer Rosh Hashivas in Cleveland, Ohio, and he learned the Chavrusa with Rav Gifter for many years in morning Seder, and was a very close and devoted Talmud. And he handed over a particular worldview and a particular philosophy based on the key values to focus on. And the records in this book, of course, Rabbi Wein, who's more than a generation older than me, learned more directly from the great Lithuanian rabbis who themselves were in Lithuania. But what we share in common is writing down the record and the history of these values, the way that we receive them, to say this is the area to focus on. And so in a certain sense, this is what this book is about. It is a presentation of a moral and strategic vision for Klal Yisrael, for the Jewish people today, both on a communal level, a national level, as well as an individual level, where to say, where are the areas that we need to focus on, both from a practical as well as a philosophical point of view. And let's begin perhaps with a statement which is a very radical statement, because it touches on the philosophical issue here. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Mir Rosh Hashiva, writes that in his work Sichos Musar, he writes that it is possible to fulfill all 613 commandments and still be on the wrong path in life. Okay, I'll repeat that. It is possible to keep all 613 commandments and all of Shulchan Aruch and still be on the wrong path in life. He's one of his sources for this concept, or his proof for it, is from Yaakov Avinu. So you know, when Yaakov was about to confront Esav, it says, "Im lavan garti," and the Midrash says, "V'tariag mitzvah shamarti," and I kept tariag mitzvahs. And at the same time, it says that he was afraid. He was afraid that he would be killed by Esav, and all the Mephoroshim asked, what was he afraid of? Hashem had promised him that he would look after him and bring him back to his home in peace and safety. And Rashi brings from the Midrash, Shema Garam Hachet. Perhaps the sin had caused him, a sin had caused him to have his defenses weaken and lose the right to that divine promise. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, if Yaakov Avinu is saying about himself, Taryag Mitzvah Shamati, he kept all 613 mitzvahs, of whatever that means in the context of the forefathers, and yet he was afraid that he had sinned. From here is one of the areas of source where Reb Chaim Shmulevitz builds this principle that it is possible to do all 613 commandments, all of Shulchan Aruch, and still be on the wrong path in life. But now that's a very, in a certain sense, frightening and disempowering statement. It's radical. Let's make no mistake about it. It's radical. It's so radical that I certainly would not have had the temerity to think it, let alone say it aloud, let alone say it in a public forum at a reputable Orthodox institution such as Yeshiva University. How to say such a thing? If it were not coming from the mouth of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, we would discard it as heresy immediately. But Rav Chaim comes with a very important principle here, and that's why we're talking about the values of focus of a moral and strategic vision for the Jewish people. It's not just the practicalities of focus, it is really about certain meta-values which are so important that without which the entire system is brought into jeopardy. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz then gives the guidance on what to do, because then you can say, well, if Shulchan Aruch is not our guide, then what is our guide? And surely it's disempowering in the extreme. At least one of the great benefits of having a code of Jewish law, of having a halacha, a system of halacha of Shulchan Aruch, is that we know what to do, and no one can have a sense of doubt of how they should lead their lives. Now, if we say that, well, that's not enough, where does that leave us? So the first thing Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says is we need to daven to Hashem that we find the right path. After we've davened, what are the guidelines? And he says we need to look to see how are the mitzvahs of the Torah described. And he says they're described as, one thing, derachei darchei noam, the ways are ways of pleasantness. And explains Reb Chaim from the Gemara in Yevamos and the Gemara in Sukkah that we find that this is a halachic principle. For example, the Gemara in Sukkah says, when it's discussing which branches are valid to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, It contemplates the possibility of a particular branch and discards it as the potential to be used to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, because it was discussing a branch that had thorns on it, and the Gemara says, Derachei Darchei Noam, you cannot fulfill your mitzvah of lulav with this branch because there are thorns on the branch and the thorns will hurt your hands. And the Torah says its ways are ways of pleasantness, and this cannot be the lulav that Hashem had in mind. And that's a halachic statement. It's not saying you fulfill your mitzvah, but it's better not to do it because of Derachei Darchei Noam. It's saying it is being used as a method of interpretation of the halacha, that Derachei Darchei Noam, and that therefore it disqualifies the branch on the grounds that it is not proper halach, on halachic grounds it disqualifies the branch, because this cannot be the branch that Hashem had in mind. And from this he learns a principle. He says, if a person has got to live a life of Torah, where the final product of their Torah and their mitzvahs has got to be a way of Darchei Noam, a way of pleasantness, of kindliness, of gentleness, that has to be the final product. And if a person's Torah is not gentle but it's aggressive, if it's not kindly but intolerant, then at the end of the day, the person may say to you, where am I going wrong? Point to me one passage in Shulchan Aruch, one passage in the Rambam, one passage in the Gemara where I'm doing something wrong. And the answer will be, it's just not Darchei Noam. And so when we are talking about a meta value which informs the entire Torah, one such meta value is Darchei Noam. Another is, because it says in the Pasuk, Pekudei Hashem Yesharim, the statutes of Hashem are Yashar, are straight, Yashrus. Yashrus is one of the most foundational Torah values that exists, and it's also a very difficult one to define because it's such a wide and inclusive value. Yashrus includes, amongst other things, Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz, which is basic decency, civility, sensitivity. And Reb Chaim brings an amazing example to prove the point. Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed by Hashem to conduct the census of the children of the entire tribe of Levi. But the difference between the census of the tribe of Levi versus the rest, the other types of census, was that with the tribe of Levi, the children had to be counted from the age of 1 month and older. And everybody else, the census was from the age of 20 and up. And that created a logistical problem in counting the tribe of Levi, because how do you know how many babies there are in the tent? If you're counting people from the age of 20 and up, well, it's very easy to do a head count. But when you're counting them from a month old, how do you do it? So, and Hashem also instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to go in and see for himself and to count for himself. So the Midrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu had a dilemma. On the one hand, Hashem was commanding him to go and count for himself and not rely on second-hand testimony. On the other hand, to walk into people's homes to count their children is an invasion of their privacy, or privacy, whichever way you want it. And that is a basic breach of Derech Eretz. That's a basic breach of civility, of basic decency. So what did he do? Says the Midrash, he waited outside the tent. And then a voice from heaven came miraculously and gave him the numbers, because he wouldn't enter the tent. And then a voice from heaven came and gave him the numbers. Asked Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, what a chutzpah on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm paraphrasing. That how could Hashem told him, go in and count the children. So Moshe has certain ethical issues. But who is the master of morality and ethics? Is it not Hashem? And Hashem told him to go in and count the children. And you can't rely on a miracle. You can't say that Hashem wanted him to rely on a miracle. He had to go in and count. So he's got ethical questions about how Hashem could command such a thing. Great, let him percolate on those ethical dilemmas that he has, but let him fulfill his mitzvah that he has to do. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz brings from here that our fulfillment of the mitzvahs has to be put through the prism of Derech Eretz. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher, knew that it was impossible that Hashem was instructing him to violate such a fundamental principle of decency and Derech Eretz by entering other people's homes and invading on their privacy. And so what he knew that this mitzvah had to be interpreted in such a way that he would wait outside. He didn't know how, where the solution was going to come from, but he felt he could not fulfill the mitzvah, and that was in accordance with the will of Hashem that the Derech Eretz be factored into it. Here I think I can add a caveat, because I know that this is being recorded. And it's an important caveat. As they always say, don't try this at home on your own. Psak halacha is the field and the realm of experts. It's not an armchair science and not an armchair sport, I should say. It's the science of experts. And so when talking about factoring derech eretz into the process of psak halacha that we leave for the great poskim, it's not something that we can start paskening for ourselves at home. What is of greater importance is the fact that derech eretz becomes such an important part of our fulfillment of Torah that it becomes the guideline for how we fulfill the Torah, and it is the meta value. We're talking about meta values that we need to focus on as the Jewish people, that if a person can keep the entire Torah, but if it's not a Torah of Darchei Noam, ways of pleasantness, if it's not a Torah of Derech Eretz, then they can say, well, point to me exactly where in Shulchan Aruch I'm going wrong. And even if we can't point to a specific halacha, then what Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is arguing is that person is off the path. He gives another guideline. The Gemara in Yuma, Pei Vav, quotes the Braisa to explain the Pasuk, V'havta Hashem Elokecha, you must love the Lord your God. And the Braisa says, how do you love Hashem? So it says, the way we fulfill that Pasuk is, Shiyei Shem Shemayim Yisayv Al Yadecha, that the name of heaven should be beloved through you. If you really love Hashem, you will want other people to love Hashem. And how do you get other people to love Hashem? This is a big question that everyone is involved, thank God, in the outreach initiatives. Kiruv. We want to bring in Jews who don't keep Torah and mitzvahs. We want to bring them closer to Yiddishkeit. How do we do that? How do we bring Jews closer? So here the Gemara, the Braisa, is giving us direct guidance. If you want people to love Hashem, a very simple formula. It says, if you have someone, Mishekara Vashana, someone who's learned Chumash and Mishnah and has learned Torah, and goes out into the world, Umasao Matona Be'emuna Im Habriyas, and such a person deals and interacts with people with integrity and faithfulness and honesty, Be'emuna, that word that encapsulates so much, V'diburo B'nachas Im Habriyas, and speaks kindly and gently to people, then Ma'abriyot Omrin, then what do people say? Ashrei Aviv, Ashrei Rabo Shalam Do Torah. How fortunate is a father, how fortunate is a teacher who has taught such a person Torah. And then the opposite. If you have a person who's learned Torah and they do not deal with faithfulness and integrity and do not speak kindly and gently to people. So the Bryce is saying a very simple thing. If you want to reach people, the most powerful way to convince Jews who are distant from Torah that Torah is of value is they need to see Torah Jews behaving in the most exemplary fashion in terms of ethics and morality and integrity and gentleness and kindness. They will be inspired by that, and when they see the opposite, they will be turned off by that. What Rav Chaim Shmulevitz brings from that, he said, we have there a foundational principle. A person who keeps Torah and mitzvahs, and after it all, he keeps it in a fashion that is repugnant to an ordinary person who is an outsider, not an insider, an outsider who's looking in, a skeptic looking in and seeing the kind of Torah that is being lived. If they're inspired by that Torah, then you know you're on the right path. And if they put off by that Torah, then you know that you're on the wrong path. Then you'll say, well, how do you say I'm on the wrong derech in life? Point to me in Shulchan Aruch where I've gone wrong. And the answer is, but look at what people are saying. And that's what Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says. You want to test for the derech, then go and see what do people say about it. What does an objective outsider looking in say about such a person? Again, it gets back to these fundamental values that we are talking about, that are core and central values, which are such that if you don't have these values, the entire system is undermined. And this is the important point that he's made in the book, and quoting from all of these sources, including others, that taking the area of Derech Eretz, for example, Rav Aaron Kotler makes the following very important statement. He says that when there's no Derech Eretz, it's not that you've got no Derech Eretz, but you have Torah. The lack of Derech Eretz, the lack of decency, poisons the Torah. We're now in the time of the Sfira. Right, and there are different minhagim about when to begin the Avelus for the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva, whether you begin now or after Rosh Chodesh. Why did the students of Rabbi Akiva die? It says famously, no, Mivnei Shelo Nagu Kovod Zeh Lazeh. They didn't treat each other with respect, with decency, a lack of Derech Eretz. So Rav Aaron Kotler says, is that not too harsh a punishment? I mean, here you had the cream of that generation, the most brilliant and outstanding Talmid HaChamim, who were cut down in the prime of their life. And it's true that it's wrong to treat another person with disrespect, and how much more so a colleague, a person who's learning Torah with you, but surely that's too harsh. And he explains it with reference to another Gemara, which is also equally puzzling. When Moshe Rabbeinu was up on Har Sinai, and it says in the Torah, in Parshas Akev, he didn't eat and he didn't drink for 40 days and 40 nights. Why did he not eat and drink? Derech Eretz. Because that's not the minag hamakom. It's not the minag of the place. Why is that a derech Eretz? It's part of a sensitivity. When you're in a place, you go to a shul, and they have a particular minag, even if that minag is in conflict with your minag, if there's a public display of it, you need to accord, to conform with the minag of that place. Like the Tosefta says, in Masechta Derech Eretz, it says, Al tiyeh hayoshev ben haomdim vehaomed ben hayoshvim. Do not be one who sits amongst those that stands and one who stands amongst those that sit. If the shul has a minhag to stand at that time, then you stand. If the shul has a minhag to sit, then you sit. That's part of Derech Eretz. It's a sensitivity and a respect for the people around you. So Moshe Rabbeinu was up in Shemayim. And in the heavens, nobody eats and drinks. So he didn't eat and drink as a Derech Eretz. Asher of Aaron Kotli says, but it was Pikuach Nefesh. Right? Not to eat and drink. It was a serious matter. It wasn't just that he was going to skip one meal. I mean, you know, some people feel to skip one meal is a pikuach nefesh. That's not a pikuach nefesh. You know, we Jews are a little bit attached to our food. But 40 days and 40 nights, that is a pikuach nefesh. So Hashem had to make miracles so that he could fulfill that. Why? Pikuach nefesh sets aside all the mitzvahs of the Torah. How much more so it sets aside Derech Eretz? So he explains a very important principle. He says, when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, that was the point that the Torah was entering the world. The Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. And the Torah Shebal Peh. And at that point, the Derech Eretz had to be at a perfection. Because if there had been a lacking in Derech Eretz, then the Torah itself would have been tainted by it. If the Torah had come into the world in an atmosphere of a compromised Derech Eretz, albeit a justifiable compromise of Derech Eretz, because he was Pikuach Nefesh, human beings need food. Nevertheless, that would have tainted the Torah, because what Rav Aaron's Chiddush is this, is that a lack of Derech Eretz poisons the Torah. It's not just that you've still got the Torah, but you don't have the Derech Eretz, and unfortunately a person only got half of it right. He's got nothing of it right, because the lack of Derech Eretz will poison every part of the Torah. So when it came into the world, at that point, it had to come in an absolute perfection. And he says the same as the pshat with the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, when the students of Rabbi Akiva were at a crucial stage in Jewish history. Although the Torah Shebal Peh was given by Hashem at Har Sinai, nevertheless, the point where the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral tradition, was being crystallized and was being developed in its preparation for the writing down for the Mishnah and then later on for the Gemara, a crucial stage in Jewish history, was the time of Rabbi Akiva and his students. And those students, Rabbi Akiva, it's often referred to in the Gemaras, was the Moshe Rabbeinu of the Torah Shebal Peh. He was the Moshe of the Torah Shebal Peh. So at the point, in the same way, that as the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, was coming into the world, the Derech Eretz had to be at a perfection. So too, although the Torah Shebal Peh came into the world also at Har Sinai, nevertheless, when it was going through that critical period of formulation, the Derech Eretz had to be at a perfection. And if the scholars of the time, Lo Nagu Kavod Zeh LaZeh, had not treated each other with sufficient dignity and respect, that would have poisoned the Torah for all future generations. And so They had to suffer their fate, because other people had to be entrusted with the task of condensing and of distilling the Torah Shebal Peh so that it would be a pure Torah that would be given to future generations. And so what we see from all of this, and there's a lot more source material on that, but what we see from all of this is that there are certain meta values which are crucial and foundational to the Torah. One is this value of Derech Eretz, of Menschlichkeit, of the mitzvahs bein Adam lechaveiro, that whole branch of Torah upon which everything else is predicated. And without that, the Torah that one has is severely compromised. When we're talking about meta values, these are the values that we need. And if we're talking about a moral and strategic vision for the Jewish people today, perhaps one of the great values that we need more than any other is that simple value which is coined in the Yiddish expression, to be a mensch. It's untranslatable, menschlichkeit. What does it mean? To be a person, to be decent, to be civil. It means all of that, and it contains even more. The dignity of discourse, the dignity of interaction, the respect, the kindliness, the chesed, that kind of deracha darchei no'am is something which is so crucial for the Jewish world today as we debate some of the most difficult and painful issues. As the land of Israel, the state of Israel at the moment, is getting torn apart by the debates surrounding the question of conscription. Those debates, and are very painful and difficult debates, and other debates which are taking place all around the Jewish world, one of the most important values that we need to preserve at all costs, no matter how painful the debate and no matter how difficult the situation, is the value of Darchei Noam, the value of decency, of emunah, of gentleness, of kindliness, that has to permeate our very beings, because that is one of the most important defining qualities of what it means to be a Torah Jew. That value of decency and of menschlichkeit that has to permeate absolutely everything that we do and forms the bedrock of it. And there are one or two interesting stories which are mentioned in the book famously about Rav Yisrael Salanter in this regard, because it talks about the consequences. You know, there's the famous story about Rav Yisrael Salanter when he instituted in his shul, he paskened, that they daven earlier on a Friday night, because there were a lot of Jewish women who were working as domestic employees in the home of other Jews. And he said that if shul ends too late, then these women who need to celebrate their own Shabbos are going to get home much later. But people said, but you know, by davening earlier, you're not saying Kriya Shema Bizmana, and what about the brachas? And of course there's a heter in halacha, but he said it's fine. If you want to have the chumrah, you want to have the stringency in your Kriya Shema, but then it is on what cheshbon, on what account is that? There's another famous story that is told by about Rav Yisrael Salanter, that he was traveling. He did a lot of traveling and speaking in different places of Europe, and he was visiting amongst the Gera Hasidim, and he arrived there. It was in the middle of the day, and they had a big mincha to welcome him there, and there was a great buzz in the town. They heard a great Litvisher Godel had arrived in town, and everybody came to daven mincha, and he was going to speak and meet everybody afterwards. And he davened a very quick mincha, and the Hasidim were very disappointed. They said, a great Litvisher Godel, why does he daven so quickly? And then he said, and it was uncharacteristic of him, and he explained, he said he looked around the room and he saw all the balei melacha, people coming from work, artisans and salesmen and all kinds of different people who'd come from work and taken off time from work, and he said he felt for their parnosa. So now he said, must he now daven a long amida at the expense of their parnosa? Of course, that's a story which needs to be taken in context. He was concerned about somebody else's parnosa. The story doesn't allow one to daven quickly to save one's own parnosa. That was part of his sensitivity and his kindness to the people. And that's why, by the way, the halacha is so stringent with the concept of tircha de tzibura, of not wasting the time of the tzibur, to the extent that there's some opinions in the halacha that don't even allow you to close the Sefer Torah during the brochas of the person who gets the aliyah, because that's going to take time for the Baal Korah to find his place afterwards, because we're concerned for people's time. And that's part of a sensitivity to consider what are the consequences of what one does. There's another example mentioned in the book, although it doesn't have the full details on it. It's a personal story, and we kept back some of the details, not for publication in the book, because in case people could put the identity together. But it's a story which I heard directly from my own Rosh Hashiva, that in the yeshiva of Telz in Cleveland, there was a widow who was the chef, who was the cook in the yeshiva. And there were certain bochrim, there were certain students who had problems with her standards of kashrus. It wasn't, you know, chas v'shalom that she was giving anybody anything treif, but they felt that the level of the yeshiva should be higher. There are more chumras, there are more hidurim that could be done in the yeshiva, and they went to complain about her work. They went to Rav Gifter to complain about her work, and anybody who knows anything about Rav Gifter knows that he was a very, very fiery personality. And he blasted them and threw them out of his office, and he said, you want me to give up my chelik in Olam Haba to oppress an almona, because the chef was she was a widow, she was an almona. He said, for your chumras and kashrus, and he threw them out. And as they were leaving his office, my Rosh Hashiva, my Rebbe, encountered Rav Gifta in the corridor there, and he said to him, Yibadil lacham mitocha eida haraz, so separate yourself from this evil congregation. Harsh words, but you see, what he was saying is, if you have a Torah which is cruel to an almona, then you can come with any Makoris and Shulchan Aruch that you want, but at the end of the day, that's the wrong Torah. That's not the Torah that Hashem wanted. And that's part of what Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is saying. That's part of what Rav Aaron Kotler is saying. That's part of the Masorah that I received, that says when looking at the meta system of the Torah, this is what is necessary. It needs to look at the core values and say these are foundational values, and the final product of the Torah that we create has to be a Torah of gentleness and menschlichkeit kind. Final point is the following. There's a lot to discuss. This is just a mere fraction of what's there, and I'm not going to give the full perspective. But the other meta value, which is so important, and it's a crucial in terms of the moral and strategic vision for the Jewish people, is based on the very well-known Gemara in Gittin with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who had to make one of the most difficult decisions in Jewish history, and he had to make it on the spur of the moment without being able to consult with anybody. And that is when, as you know, at the time of the Roman siege of Yerushalayim, and he was offered anything he wished. He could make one wish, because the newly appointed Roman Caesar had the debt of gratitude to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he said, you can have whatever you want. And he had the opportunity possibly of even saving Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. And he chose not to do that, and he said instead, Tenli Yavne v'chachamea, give me Yavne and her sages. And with that he made a strategic call, which is to say that the future of Klal Yisrael is dependent on our Torah learning. And that decision which he made is another meta value upon which all of Torah and Yiddishkeit is founded. And history has paskened in favor of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. History is paskened. This incredible institution, Yeshiva University, is an example of that. Because, you know, and sometimes coming in from the outside of American Jewry, I can see things that perhaps on the inside you tend to take for granted. In the 1950s, and I'm sure that there are many people who will testify to this, the conventional wisdom in America was that Orthodox Judaism was something of the past, and that the future belonged to the other movements, and that the future belonged to a watered down, changed, reformed kind of Judaism that bore no resemblance to the Torah that we received on Mount Sinai and the Torah of the generations of Jews that came before us, because America was the new country and the new world. And it was institutions like Yeshiva University, the Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, and other institutions, the heroes of American Jewry of that time, the great gedolim of American Jewry at that time, Rav Soloveitchik, whose yahrzeit is coming up, and the very important dedication learning that will be taking place here next week, Rav Soloveitchik, the great pioneers referred to earlier, Rav Motel Katz, Rav Aaron Kotler, Rav Yitzchak Ruderman, these great pioneers of Torah Judaism in America believe differently. They believe there would be a future for Torah Judaism, and they've been vindicated, and they built places of learning. What was the source of the revival of Torah Judaism here in America when everybody thought that it was over? It was these great yeshivas. It was these great places of Torah learning where Torah would be learned at the highest possible levels. That is what gave it its energy and its impetus and its vision. And history has shown Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was 100% right. There is no Jewish community on earth that has ever thrived or even survived unless it's dedicated to Torah learning for its children, for its adults, at the highest possible levels. There is no future for any Jewish community without the highest levels of Torah learning. And that's what's been proven in American history. And I can tell you the same. I come from a country at the southern tip of Africa, that if someone would say to you that at the beginning of the 21st century there'd be a thriving Jewish community on the African continent, right at the bottom of the African continent, you would be very surprised. But if you go there and you will see shuls and schools and dafyomi and incredible growth in Torah. And again, in the 1950s and 60s, people had said this was the end of it. There was not going to be a future for Torah Judaism in South Africa, and yet it did. And the revival was led by great Torah scholars who believed in the future of Yiddishkeit and the future of Judaism based on Torah learning, because that is the life force of the Jewish people. As it's contained in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where it says that a Talmid Chochem is compared to a Mayan HaMizgaber, to an overflowing spring. Reb Chaim Volozhner, the great student of the Vilna Gaon, says, why an overflowing spring? Because a spring brings fresh water to the surface. Even if there's mud and dirt on the surface of the ground, the fresh waters of the spring pump through that and cleanse it. And that applies in our own personal life, and it applies at a community level. So long as in our own personal life there is fresh, life-giving waters of Torah learning pumping through our lives, then all of the other things will be cleansed. And so too on a communal level. As long as there's fresh, life-giving water of Torah learning at a communal level, then that will pump the cleanliness, the purity, the inspiration through the community. That is the only way. That is the only way that it has worked. And that's another meta-value. A person could construct the whole Jewish community and their whole lives and say to you, well, look, show me where in Shulchan Aruch. I'm learning a bit in the morning, a bit in the evening, and that's it. I'm Yotze Zayin with Kriya Shema and Shachris and Arvis, and I'm fulfilled. But without Torah learning, then a person is completely on the wrong path, and a community is completely on the wrong path. It is the only way forward for the future. So those are two aspects. There are many more. Of what is vital, but there are certain meta values. We're coming back to where we started. Certain meta values of focus that one needs to have and to emphasize, and they have to become the focal point of who we are and what defines our Yiddishkeit. And even if it's not brought explicitly in Shulchan Aruch, and you can justify yourself and hold up a Shulchan Aruch and a Rambam and the Gemara, but at the end of the day, there are certain meta values which inform the entire enterprise, and that is why it's so important to find a moral and a strategic vision for ourselves as individuals, as well as a moral and strategic vision for Klal Yisrael, for the entirety of the Jewish people, because it is that moral and strategic vision that gives us the focus, both from a practical point of view, but in a certain respect, even more importantly, from a philosophical point of view. Thank you for listening this morning.